You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Today, I don't know, today being being outside with the family and ending the day with some, you know, soil under your nails, to me is a therapy. Being connected to the land is a therapy. Being connected to farmers who are what they are, sometimes I'm not connecting to them, but being connected to the nature is to me today's therapy. Yeah.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians, talk all about their lives and music while sharing craft beers. I hope you had a killer weekend. I most certainly did. This Vox and Hops episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal are Montreal's premier metal promoter. If you're in Montreal and you're looking for a killer gig to go to, well, Heavy Montreal will most definitely have you covered. I'm beyond stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. On today's Artist Spotlight, I'm very stoked to be showcasing Divine Defilement's track Byzantine. Get ready, everyone. Here it is.
You are being murdered. You are dead. You are dead. You are dead.
was sweet. That was Divine Defilement's track Byzantine. Divine Defilement have been hard at work carving a path through the Icelandic underground and have proven themselves to be a force to be reckoned with. They blend grooves, slams, blast beats, and even some moments of melodic dissonance. If you enjoyed their track Byzantine, you should definitely go check them out. I have put a link to their Bandcamp in the description of this podcast. Massive cheers to Divine Defilement for being on today's Artist Spotlight. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I would love for you to tell a friend about the podcast. If there's someone in your life that just really enjoys nature, loves being outside, is an outdoorsman, someone that just really enjoys being connected to nature, well, you should definitely let them know that the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast exists. You can tell them that there are over 400 episodes where I sit down with some of the world's best metal musicians. We talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. If you would encourage one of your nature-loving friends to become a brand new Vox and Hops head, that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, today on the podcast, I'm very stoked to be with Pierre Caroux of Herod. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops, episode number 410.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I'm very stoked to be with Pierre Caroux of Herod. Huge fan, like obviously huge fan. There's a long backstory before I even get to asking how you're doing. So let me just dive straight into it. Discovered Psalm des Saints back in 2019 when it came out. I'm not quite sure if I just stumbled upon it or if I just listened to it because it's a Pelagic release and I tend to listen to as many Pelagic releases as I can, or if it was an introduction from Chris Knopf, who is a friend of mine, a friend of yours, Swiss also, if I'm not crazy, Vox and Hops alumni. I met him when he was doing sound and TMing the aborted run that Cryptopsy did back in 2019. So that I might have discovered you guys because of him. 2020 pandemic hit. I realized that I could talk to anyone. I wanted to talk to Herod. He hooked me up with Mike. Chris introduced me to Mike. I had him on. Vox and Ops episode number 144 came out back on May 17th of 2020. So it was probably one of the first pandemic interviews that I did, if I think back to the timing of it all. But here we are now, 2023, and Herod has a new freaking album come out called Iconoclast. It's coming out May 1st via Pelagic once again. And I'm having a chat with you, Pierre. Pierre, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm super happy to be here with you. I'm fine.
You should be fine because you've released a monster of an album.
Yeah.
I have had the privilege of having heard it over a year ago. We will get to that, and people are not ready for this release. I don't think people understand how good this album is. Before we get to that, I'll just ask, you know, it's Vox and Hops. Let's do it. Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends, talking about their lives and music while sharing a craft beer. Now, what beer do you have on your side that we're going to be sharing virtually today?
Yeah. This is my production beer.
Yes.
I've got the celiac disease. Do you know what it is? Gluten.
Gluten intolerance.
Of course. So I was fed up to failing at finding gluten-free beers, or they always come from far. I don't know how they exactly made, you know, but they deglutenize or whatever. Food is a really important topic to me, food and drinks. So yeah, I try to do my own gluten-free beer, which is super hard. And I started with oat, a base of oat, and then I added the typically brewing process, so hops. And I had to add the rice sugar because the oat doesn't have the capacity to transform the starch into sugar. Yes. And then into alcohol, which is what we want, right? So finally, I've got this. This is a bit light. This is batch number 2. It's 3.3 about, because in the room was pretty cold, so it didn't got high in alcohol.
Ferment, yeah.
It's actually not a beer because it's not malt, right? Because malt is gluten. Fuck the gluten. And then I'm here with some juice, with a bit of bulbs and a nice citrus hops taste.
Super sick, and I'm not surprised for some reason that you would be a person that would go to that lengths to create something, knowing everything about Herod and the intensity of the compositions and the music. I'm not surprised that you transfer this also into your food and beverage passions.
yeah.
I think it's super sick.
Cool. What are you drinking?
I am drinking something totally fucked up and bastardized. This is a brew juice from Pub Brewski from here in Montreal. It's basically a smoothie sour, so they take a sour base and then they smash it with a bunch of fruit puree. This one, they're saying that it's a pineapple and ice cream. I don't know how truthful that is. It might actually have ice cream, and I might have a tummy ache later because of the lactose in it, but we'll find out about that later. This is a 5.2% brew juice. Massive shout out to Derek, the head brewer at Brewski. I love him to death. And to Aurelien, my neighbor, who also brews there and hooked me up with this beer actually last week. So cheers to them. I'm going to pour this out, and I would love to hear about your very first beer, because I imagine you didn't always know you had celiac disease, and you probably did enjoy a beer at one point in your life with some malts.
Yeah, it was not. It's not a very good memory. I didn't really enjoy the first beers as a teenager. Was a typical lager from where I come from, bière valaisanne, with an awful taste of bleach. I don't know. I don't have a good memory of the first drinks. Basically, not an insane memory. Yeah, local lager.
And at one point, did you realize that celiac was a thing that was happening to you, and then you had to step away from anything gluten based?
Yeah, it has been long during the years. I realized about 10 years ago that I had stomach problems when I was younger. Always food intolerance and stomach problems. And then saw a doctor. He said, yeah, it's the gluten, stop it. And then I didn't have much information about what it is exactly. And I think we don't know exactly everything about, because it's like a civilization problem, you know. It's coming now and it's increasing, you know. It's everybody's problem, because gluten is not good for everybody, because the cereal we eat change massively during the Revolution Verte, Green Revolution, the new way of farming within the last 50 years, basically. Now I know it's the celiac, so if I'm eating gluten, I have anticorps, I have a peak, yeah, it's not good for me. So I have to stop it, but it's super hard to, for example, getting beers and pasta out of my life. And eat pizza, can you imagine a life without pizza?
I'm a vegan, so pizza is a delicate subject with me, because there is no good vegan cheeses. And people that are going to be listening to this are going to be like, yes, there is. There's this one. It's not good. It's okay, but it is not cheese. It is not good. I'm sorry. It's the one thing I miss, and I miss pizza with good cheese. Ugh, yeah, but I understand. I understand. But here I am drinking a beer with maybe ice cream in it.
Okay.
We'll find out. Sometimes, you know, the ingredients are not listed, so hypothetically they could have just put like vanilla in it and that would have been like the ice cream part of it. I'll have to ask Derek.
So you're a flexible vegan, right?
Or
when it comes to beer, okay, we all have our reasons.
When it comes to food I'm very strict, but when it comes to beer, I'm a little bit more relaxed. So it was something you had to mourn, the lack of pizza, the lack of pasta, the lack of beer in your life. That's something that you had to tackle.
Yeah, and I'd like to be involved and active with such problems. So that's why I got into this. Now, as I said, food is a really important topic to me, and with my family as well. I'm working in farms. In a farm especially, they do ancient cereals. So I have local buckwheat flower, and I try to live with nothing grow. You know, the gluten is doing everything, and yeah. So buckwheat,
because it's in everything, because it was so cheap and easy to grow, right? Basically, is why it's wheat, right? Wheat is the main source of gluten that's in everything right now since the Green Revolution, as you mentioned.
Yes, and it's easy to cook with it because everything is easy to cook, and we transform the cereals to have them the more gluten in them. So yeah, basically we're transforming. That's why we have a wave of old cereals now, ancient cereals coming back, of course, because there is so many cereals.
Variety is important. And variety is important in the world.
Yeah, and we focus on maybe like 5 or 6 wheat cereals, basically. It's insane when you imagine. So yeah, there is a wave of people who would like to eat differently, and I'm part of it.
Very cool. I think that's very interesting. We'll touch on that a little bit later. But I would love to hear about the soundtrack of your youth. When you were growing up in your parents' or guardians' house, what music was playing when you were not in control of the radio? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
Mostly my dad. He was into jazz, into New Orleans jazz. Jazz manouche, jazz à la française. Birelli Lagraine or... manouche, yeah, manouche jazz, do you know what it is?
No, I'm sorry, but it sounds very interesting. Yeah.
Also classical music, a lot of. And that's the soundtrack of my youth. And now I'm getting older, I've got a family, and becoming my dad, basically. So I start to hear that music home when I'm with my daughter, and I don't know what music to put. Sometimes I put really extreme stuff when mom is not here to see how she's reacting to these noisy sounds. And then also a mix with classical and jazz.
I love that. I got to go back to how does she react to extreme music?
Pretty good.
Because I play everything and anything all the time. So
pretty good.
So. And my kids are pretty zen about it. So
pretty good so far. She's 2. I mean, yeah, I think she likes it. We'll see.
I think it's awesome because I work in daycare too, so I put a lot of extreme music on, typically on Fridays when there's new albums coming out, or when I get like a SoundCloud link of a album from Herod. I blast it at work, and the kids just sit there and they keep playing, and there's zero reaction whether I put that. But if I put on like a Paw Patrol song or any like poppy kid thing, they just freak out. I think it's whatever has like a nostalgia. I guess it's like us as humans too, is like a nostalgic emotional connection to something is what makes music make people move and have more of a reaction to it, as opposed to the intensity of it. Maybe it was the first time they heard it, maybe. But
yeah, intensity is something important in Herod, I guess.
At what point did the jazz and the classical music motivate you to want to become a musician? Is that something that was inherently that you pursued or that your parents pushed you towards? When did music become a big part of your life?
Yeah, interesting. I don't consider myself as a musician because I never learned to play the guitar. And then I learn on my own, never take really lessons. I don't know how to read, compose the music. And from second one, I took a guitar. I studied Herod and never played any covers. And I don't, you know, when we're friends and they say, yeah, you're a musician, you play the guitar, the guitar. Yeah. I said, no, please don't. I do on a folk guitar. It does no sense. And basically, I only play Herod. And yeah, so
that's interesting. That's so different than Mike.
Yeah.
From Herod also, because he's like a music teacher and he teaches kids, and it's so different that, and then you guys work together somehow, and you can still communicate, which is interesting.
We are the exact opposite, and. It was not easy, the process with Mike, because he was away. We did the 2 records basically the same. And exactly the same, we did all three records. I mean, starting from my riffs than working with Fabien on drums and Bertrand on the other guitar, doing the music instrumentally and then adding the vocals on top. That's the way we do. So Mike was in touch. We didn't see him during the glorious COVID years. And he went on top, which is not really easy.
No, especially because he's very musical and he has his music school. So it must be, he must really, really trust you guys.
It was not easy because we were such in a bulb, you know, doing the album instrumentally. And the process is so heavy in Herod. There's something not really easy for me because I'm more the artistic composer. But then, thanks to Fabien, the drummer, who is someone really meticulous, but also takes a lot, takes sometimes hours to take a decision between two versions, you know? So that's why it took so long to give birth to that third record.
It's not that long, though. And I'm saying this from my perspective of Cryptopsy, because we take a long time. And it's complicated music. You're not making, and I'm not going to name any bands here, but there are bands that I am friends with that release albums very frequently, but their songs are not the most complex, and people can try to figure out who I'm talking about, but they're pretty, could be all on the same album, hypothetically. Herod, there's definitely an evolution, and Cryptopsy is the same approach in my mind. So Iconoclast came out May 1st via Pelagic. Love Pelagic. Shout out to Robin. Had him on the podcast a few months ago at this point. So 4 years is not that bad, because I know the truth and that the album was ready last year. So it only really took 3 years to put it together. And it was a global pandemic that was hanging you guys up, and you were touring or playing some shows for Samba de Saint that dropped in 2019. So it's pretty standard in my opinion. So I don't think it's that bad. I would like to go back to your first music experience. Do you remember the first time you ever saw a band play music live?
That's a tough one. I don't really know. Because my youth, I was mainly playing hockey. You know, that's why.
Les Canadiens.
Yeah. The shirt, Les Canadiens, Montréal. So the first, I don't really remember the first concert. I was typically the 90s new metal guy. I guess like you.
Absolutely. It's our age. Our age is showing. That's
I'm all. Really opposed to the comeback of new metal in 2023.
Oh, you don't like it. Interesting.
I'm a better hearing gent instead. So my first concert is pretty blurry. I don't really remember.
Your first time on stage, it would have been a Herod show, because that's when you picked up the guitar and that's where Herod became. So do you remember that first Herod show?
First one, yeah, exactly. We were only three at the time. It was a contest to play in a big Switzerland festival, the Greenfield Festival. So it was a typical contest in a really tiny club in Lausanne, Switzerland. So at the time I was alone on the guitars, playing on two amps both sides, Fabien drums, and the former singer David, and we won.
No way. Then you went and played the festival.
And then we played the Greenfield. Yeah.
And how was that? Was it worth it? Was it everything you imagined it would be?
It was nice. It was a very good memory, because you know, you play the Greenfield, you see the poster, the festival poster, Iron Maiden is up, and Herod is like,
it's at the bottom
right. Now at the bottom right, playing 12.
You played with Maiden.
I play with Maiden, and you play at noon in front of people like waking up like this.
Because that's interesting, because I was going to ask, if you could go back, would you redo a festival? Because a lot of young artists listen to the podcast, and I try to dissuade them from being a part of these festivals where they have to sell tickets and for the opportunity to maybe get some showcase stuff. So at least for you guys, it paid off and you ended up playing a massive festival.
It started pretty nicely for us as a newcomer, because it went super. We jumped a few steps. Basically, for the first record, coming back into 2014, thanks to Chris Noth that you talked about. Chris is our former front of house and someone important in the Herod story, because he became our booker pretty soon. And thanks to him, we played 35 shows in Switzerland for the first record, which is insane. Switzerland is so small. It's
a small country, I was going to say, yeah.
Pretty fast, we did the opening for Gojira, which was a huge influence at the time. And then we did the Carcass opening tour around Europe in 2015, which was insane, because we were opening for, after us was Voivod. Then Napalm Death, Obituary, Carcass.
Holy shit, yeah. Damn, good for you guys. Keep it going.
Yeah, but the deal was, it's a nice story, because the deal was, we were working on the tour. Everybody in the band has a job on the tour. I mean, I was a light assistant. One were doing the merch, the singer was doing the tour management, drummer was taking of drums, and we were playing 20 minutes every night, touring the whole Europe with monsters and lovely people. That was, that was great. Memories in Ireland, in Glasgow, with the spontaneity of the new. The first one, the first time you do stuff. And
it's just the best.
Yeah, it was a blast. It was basically the best shows.
So cool. And that's an interesting way a lot of like younger bands, once again, will be encouraged to buy onto a tour, which means that they spend money to be on a tour package, whereas you guys offered your time and services as a way to buy onto the tour. It's a different approach. It's an interesting approach. And it's a way that you can sort of like, you learn even more because you're so much more implicated in each night's show.
Can you imagine? It's so in some way, it's so formative. It's such a because you work for the headliner, but you play first. That means you first work, last as well.
you had to behave yourself.
Man, after one show in England, the day was lasting for a day, and we said, yeah, all right, 34 to go. But then in the end, we come back from the tour, and communication, humans problems, we end up stopping working with the singer. So it's also something. You're packed everyone together, of course. That's the other side of it.
It's tough. Bands are a relationship. It's
tough.
A family. You're working together. We don't always like each other. That's for sure. There's ups and downs in many relationships. And when you're in a band, it's like 5-6 relationships all at once. And then you got your crew members involved, and it can be extremely heavy. Which is why open communication is an important factor when you're in a band.
Yeah. Getting older is at least knowing that sometimes you see that it will be not possible with anyone. And now I try to learn it and say, I will not connect to you. I'll stay on my side and I'll pass.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just, you know, someone's having a bad day and it's best to just not say anything. And that comes with maturity, too. I'm not going to poke that because it's going to pop, and maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow when everyone's a little bit less drunk. Maybe.
the funny thing is that my best touring memory is basically without Herod, without playing, because we did the Death Crusher tour 2015, because I went as a roadie in 2013 with Carcass. They were opening for Amon Amarth, And I was at the time doing guitar tech for Samael. Do you know them?
Yeah,
you know them?
Absolutely. Yeah.
First show with Samael, the bass player of Samael was doing the light for Carcass. He told me, yeah, I'm going out on tour with this British gentleman. Would you like to come with me? I had no idea about lights. So I was doing the assistant light technician. And I had no idea about Carcass. Can you imagine? So I listened to Carcass 2 days before going on tour with them for a month and a half. And they were about to release Surgical Seal in 2013. And then it's a love story, man. I was the first month touring with these Brits gentlemen, seeing William Steer playing every night. It touched me super deep, super hard.
Which is exactly how you ended up connecting with him to become a part of Ensemble Dessin.
Yeah, that was tough to ask because it's such a legend, and I don't consider myself as a guitarist, of course, when you see him playing. But in a way, I came back from that tour and I tried to change some things on my guitar playing, lowering the gauge, bending more, having a more, not groovy, but more feelings, more bends. And I think in Sombre Dessin, there is some influence about Bill. And of course, he accepted to do that featuring. Which was
amazing. So good.
Amazing.
So good.
Yeah, yeah.
I was in love with that record, and then I went backwards to the first record, and then I was telling all my friends, I was like, you have to listen to this band. You're going to love them. Sending Ensemble Dessin to everyone and anyone that I could, listening to it on tour. I went out that aborted tour when we came through the States with Chris Noth. I was listening to it then. Here we are now, Iconoclast coming out. I read from the concept is a political, social, and liberating act is what you guys are associating Iconoclast with, as opposed to what it used to be known for, as to like destroying and defacing religious artifacts. Talk to me more about the concepts that went into the record, and what the point of having a concept with a record is as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting because the concept was so huge on the last one, and actually we're realizing, I mean, we're still a newcomer band. We know that we know where we are, and I realize actually having a concept is sometimes people do not really care.
Well, they just don't. They don't catch it if it's not like thrown in their face there.
Yeah, I understand. But the topic on Sombre Dessin, yeah, basing the fall of our civilization with the footage of the ship breakers, these boats crash in Pakistan or whatever. Iconoclast is the idea of building something new out of broken stuff, because my life changed so much because I became a dad, and I end up in a shithole in the countryside, living in an old farm, and starting doing farming, and got into this autonomic thing. To start to grow stuff. I grow vegetables. I work in a farm. I'm back to school to become a farmer. Wow. Basically now, which is the time is now. Yeah, family plus all that. Plus,
everything all at once.
Yeah, I own lambs basically that I grow and I sell them. And to me, growing a new world out of the broken one. Because I truly think we're heading wrong. The pandemic was a step further, and I realize how much far from autonomy we are, and that's a new goal.
Yeah, well, one thing at a time, and one step at a time, and you have made like a huge leap forward for yourself and your family, and that's the important part, right? So you're leading by example. You're not sitting up on a high throne telling people to change, and you're not changed yet. So you've taken those first steps.
I wanted to be active. I wanted to be part of the solution. I mean, the solution, I think, because we were a band that talks a lot. You know, in Herod, we were sometimes going on rehearsal and did not play for a rehearsal because we were just talking about philosophy or basically politics or and becoming a dad changed me so much. And I wanted to be on the active part, and that's why. But on the other way, it's not really easy with developing an international band on the international scale. Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
So I was going to say, what is the future going to hold for the band if you're so rooted now? Are we going to see a Herod tour with Pierre not there? Is that... a replacement session person because you just can't liberate yourself to go enough?
No, yeah, I have no idea. It's just a period that the timing is really bad because, of course, I'll become that for a second time. Actually, I'm a booker. Also, I'm working part-time as a booker in the...
You're very busy, Pierre.
kind of. So I book the band in Switzerland, but Switzerland is a tiny land, and we'll play a few shows in Switzerland for the release, nice club shows. And then on the international scale, it's not really easy, actually, because the process in Herod is so heavy as well, that we releasing an album, and then it took us years to compose and do another one while we don't tour. And of course, it's like we started again from scratch at every release, and having an international booking agency in Europe, and the fees are super, super hard, which we don't have. So at the moment, for example, we play the Magnificent Arctangent in...
It's really cool, that man.
So we're trying to build shows around, but it's not easy. So we try stuff, but the reality is that we're still a newcomer, and time and fees are super, super tough.
Basically, what you would need would be Gojira or a band such as that to say, we want you, come back out with us. That would be something that would be helpful.
Could you make that possible, please?
I can try from different angles, but... a pelagic, you know, pelagic robin, let's go. The ocean, hypothetically, would be another very interesting and amazing tour package for you guys, with them releasing an album around the same time as you guys.
but then we already did. the last tour was opening for The Ocean.
Well, that was a few years ago. Hey, what's up, Vox and Hopsins? I just want to take a little moment about Cryptopsy's upcoming tours. That's right, I'm talking about the Scream of Perseverance tour and our headliner dates that coincide with that tour called As Summer Burns. The Scream of Perseverance tour is kicking off at the end of May and runs all the way until the end of June. We are supporting the mighty Death to All. We are going all over the United States, and we are hitting some of Canada. So excited to be honoring the legendary music of Death alongside amazing musicians that performed on these albums. Even more stoked to be doing some headliner dates in some cities that I've actually never played in. If you are planning to come to any of these shows, you should definitely grab your tickets by going to voxandhops.com/summer, and you will be able to grab all of your tickets there. That's voxandhops.com/summer. Do it, people. Come hang out with me. Enjoy life, metal, and craft beer in your hometown. Come to a show. We're going to have a great time. Now, enough about all of that. Let's get back to the episode. Something that did happen that was very cool on this record is I've done it a few times. I finish the interview with a member and I chat for a bit afterwards, and I say, if ever you want to have me as a guest on the next record, I'd be super stoked. And I did that to Mike. I did that to Christian from LLNN, both pelagic bands, and it happened. So I'm very stoked to be a part of the new record on The Edifice. I recorded the vocals actually sitting right here, to be honest with you. It was awesome. I was very, very, very stoked.
Thank you so much.
That it worked out, that Mike basically held my hand throughout the whole process. What a track. The album itself is magnificent. People are not ready for this release. I don't think people understand. I hope that Pelagic is ready to push it, because people need to hear it. I'm going to push it, that's for damn sure. But it was an honor for me to be a part of something with you guys, because I'm a huge fan.
It's an honor for us, dude. I mean, having, can you imagine, Monsters on board. The track is kind of super strong. It's the first single. We thought 100% we go for that one with you. And then at the moment we ask you to go for mostly high
screams. It was amazing.
Voicey.
Yeah.
High screams. And I think the result is massive.
It's awesome. I can't wait to play together and we could play the song. That would be very cool.
You know, we were listening to Live of Cryptopsy, and then I was focusing on the high pitch. I said, that's the one I really like.
It fits the tone of
how
it.
How it is, we do the low and high, and we pack it together. It's immense.
Go check it out, people. I'll put the link to it in the description of this podcast, so you guys can check it out if you've missed my...
And even more featuring on the record as well.
Yes, there's the whole choir thing that as I was reading up for this today, because you gave me that SoundCloud link and I have lost it, but I remember it's fucking amazing. As I was reading up to right before today, and I was like, oh my God, that was so good, that song.
Yeah, this one is for my dad, because as I told you, yeah, it's one of the soundtrack of my youth is when my father was listening to this Bulgarian female choir called Les Mystères des Voix Bulgares. There is a whole story between with a guy in Switzerland, a sound engineer, who is the first to, within the communist years, who went to Eastern countries to record these choirs, female choirs, and as well flute de pan, pan flute, like insane artists with really deep sounds and melodies. And that's something that touched me really, really, really strong when I was young. And I always thought heavy riffs have to be made with these vocals. And in Adam, I saw a documentary about these choirs in Bulgaria. And I contacted the son of the guy who went to these countries to record and make them now world famous, because now Les Mystères des Voix Bulgares is something world around. So I contacted him and he put me in contact with really the heavy shit, the girls that were that part of Les Mystères des Voix Bulgares. So we ended up working with that quatuor, Eva Quartet, sent the track, recorded. They recorded the voices there, mixed on the album, and that's the only track that with no mic on it, no screams. And that was also a goal, or a midlife crisis goal, something like this.
Very is. I remember it's incredible. So I'm excited to listen to it again.
I hope you like it.
I definitely did, and I'm sure that everyone listening, go check that track out. Something that's really important for me, that I've been talking a lot about on the podcast for the past year now, is mental health. So if you're not feeling well, or if someone in your life is not feeling well, what are your tactics to conquer the darkness, to try to claw your way out of the darkness?
Yeah, we talked a lot about that with my companion, my girlfriend, and we talk about le passager noir, the black passenger, and I guess music was something to express or let it go. Of course, this is my dark side, but today I don't know, today being outside with the family and ending the day with some, you know, soil under your nails, to me is a therapy. Being connected to the land is a therapy. Being connected to farmers who are what they are, sometimes I'm not connecting to them, but being connected to the nature is to me today's therapy, yeah. And basically pushing alcohol quite away, because alcohol is a depressor.
100%.
And I know exactly where the boundaries are, my boundaries. So yeah, I did the first one. I did the dry January in its entire. So yeah, that's kind of stuff I need to do, to push and to have that balance between fun, between wellness and badness, and with technology and nature, basically.
Yes, that's the quadrants that you
and
need.
Also now I left the city because yeah, and I live close to the nature, so of course it's easier.
It's something that we always forget as humans, is that we're not supposed to live the way that we live. We're not supposed to not have earth beneath our feet and concrete everywhere.
Yeah. Of course, I could talk about that for hours, but I will not talk about the soil and how to make it live again.
I do think it's interesting, but it is something I do on tour a lot, is I'll open up my Google Maps and I'll walk to the green spot. Mm. I literally do that on tour, and I tend to do it alone, because on tour we're so surrounded all the time with noise and people, and you just walk and be alone in whatever nature I can find, and I feel like it really resets me, and I come back to the venue and I'm back in top shape, I would say.
That's nice. I was doing one thing the last few tours we did. I was taking my rollerblades, inline blades.
Really amazing.
Yeah, so I had the option to go like far in the city pretty quickly alone. So that was, yeah, was interesting.
That's amazing. I've seen people come bring like bikes or skateboards and stuff.
Yeah, of course.
I've never seen someone bring a rollerblades out. So that's cool.
You know, we should do that. We toured with the guys in Downfall of Gaia. Really nice dudes.
They just released an album. Yeah,
the drummer Mike, super nice guy, and he saw me, and then yeah, I used to play hockey. Yeah, me as well. So it was out of the metal and the posture, no? I like to break these boundaries, actually. Sometimes, yeah.
I think that's super cool. Rob Scallion, he's like a YouTuber. He does a lot of guitar stuff. He's super cool. He's really into rollerblading. So he's metal. So rollerblading could just be metal. That I'm doing a new segment called Fight the Hops. That's where I ask my guests what small goal they are tackling right now, something that they would like to accomplish within the next month, the next 2 months. It could be a personal goal. It could be like a project goal, something for the band, something health-wise. What are you doing right now to fight the hops?
Yeah, the big topic is now the farming school, basically, because, I decided to go and being involved for 1 year, so my exams are in June. I have to really stick and to work every week, because I am totally new in that world. And of course, also prepare for the shows who comes, because
and the baby, yeah.
And the baby. It has been 3 years we did not play.
Yeah.
And Mike is away, so he was in Switzerland the last weekend. We have to schedule the flights. You know, that's something. But things are going nice. Rehearsal went well. So yeah, first shows May 13 and May 20 in Switzerland.
Good. That's happened. That's an excellent way to fight the hops. Two more questions for you. I asked Mike this question. I can't remember what he said. But if you could create a collab for Herod. I've done a lot of collabs for Vox and Hops, over 60 to 80 of them. I have approximately 30 to 40 more dropping this year. Beer collabs for myself. It doesn't have to be a beer for you, because, you know, celiac disease is shitty and stuff. But what would be the perfect collab for Herod?
I've got so many ideas, man. Gluten-free beer would be insane. I would love to sell my own cheese at the merch booth.
Ooh, all right. Are we allowed to do that? I don't think we're allowed to do that. Are we allowed to do that?
I don't know. I don't care. I would like to do a market at the merch booth and sell my stuff.
That would be pretty cool, that, yeah.
My pestos and I don't know, whatever. No, but a collab. I did a collab with Luthier. I did a really special guitar, actually, with a Luthier. A 10 strings guitar. That's the main guitar that recorded 99% of Iconoclast.
10 string guitar.
Yeah, it's based on I'll be quick with the gear stuff. it's a story. I did a YouTube video.
Okay, I'm gonna check it.
It's a huge baritone guitar that we added four strings on top to make it more like a 12 strings Led Zepp.
My God. Okay.
So the I strings are doubled, but the low one are single and chugging a lot.
Very cool.
Yeah. And I'll just shoot playthrough.
Very nice.
Focusing on the guitar and the rig, which is important. So you'll see it online pretty soon.
Cool, I'm stoked about that. And I'm sure that Rob Scallion would like to play that guitar too. But you guys could go rollerblading and you could show off your rig and he'd be into it. I'm sure he would.
I'm ready.
One last question. Classic Vox and Hops wrap-up question. It probably doesn't happen to you very often because you're drinking your own low ABV beer right now. But every once in a while, it happens to everyone. What is your hangover cure?
Oh, I'm actually having one now. Because no sleep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, alcohol plus baby is not possible.
It doesn't work. No, it doesn't add up.
Doesn't work. So, super classic. I mean, a lot of water. I mean, during the night when you see yourself drifting.
It's hard. For some reason, when you're in that moment, you know that's what you're supposed to do, but we tend not to do it for some reason.
Yeah, it's such a bummer. But yeah, it helps. A lot of water, and then I eat like a pig the day after. A lot of fatness, and super classic. I mean, I don't have a magical trick.
It's because prevention is the only trick. There is no good answer, sadly. Pierre, thank you so much for hanging out with me, talking about your life, talking about music, talking about farming. I think that's super cool. And talking about craft beer. Everyone get ready. It's going to be on a lot of year-end lists. I don't think people... I keep saying it. You're too close to it. You don't understand. Iconoclast is coming, people. Came out May 1st via Pelagic. It's a monster record. I'm stoked to be a part of it, and I'm stoked that I had a chat with you, Pierre, to talk about it. Massive cheers.
Thank you so much to be part of it. Thank you so much for your time.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, this was an awesome, intense conversation. I feel like we just scratched the tip of everything that I want to dig into with Pierre. I would love to have him back on the podcast and talk more about his philosophy, about the world, about farming, about being more eco-responsible. I think it's super interesting. I would love to put a bunch of people together to talk about that as a roundtable discussion. I think that would be truly, truly, truly interesting. Brand new Herod Iconoclast just dropped. It's unbelievable. What a killer album. I'm so damn stoked stoked to be a part of it. It is going to be on many year-end lists. It is definitely going to be on my year-end list. I love the record. Massive, massive cheers to Pierre and the rest of the crew for including me on the record, and thank you to Pierre for taking the time to sit down with me and have this chat. Go check it out if you have not. It is an incredible record. Now, if you enjoy this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast's mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's VOXANDHOPS.com. When you do that, you shall receive one email a week that contains all of the details of everything that has happened recently in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. You'll get to see which episodes I dropped recently. You will get to see which episodes I have coming up. You will get to hear about any projects I have in the works before I announce them to the public. And you will get to see which albums the Vox and Hops album review crew have reviewed recently. And you'll get to see which albums Jerry Monk, Vox and Hops' metal architect, has added to the Brutal Awakenings playlist. There is always a lot of stuff going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, and I hate when you miss a single thing, so please do me a favor and sign up to the mailing list. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts. I hope you have a killer rest of the week. I will be back next week with one episode on Tuesday, but until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freights from the Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective. The only podcast you crank up to 11.